She has not yet earned my full support.
Senator Murkowski gives mixed signals on the president's pick for education secretary. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, January 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, just 7 months after it was implemented, some state lawmakers want to change a criminal reform bill.
Yes, there's been pushback. So what we try to do is we try to figure out what pushback is political.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
As it turns out, you don't need to wear a cape to save the community or a giant S on your chest to stand up for what's right. That's because the University of Alaska is working to build a better future for our state. Through education, the university is developing a skilled workforce with more teachers, engineers, and nurses to move Alaska forward. Join the university in leading the change Alaska needs. Visit drivechangeak.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski had an opportunity this morning to block President Trump's pick for education secretary. Thousands of Alaskans have raised objections to Betsy DeVos. But Murkowski voted in the Education Committee to send the nominee to the full Senate for a vote. Alaska education activists are angry, as APRN Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
DeVos is a proponent of school vouchers, with no direct experience in public schools as a student, educator, or parent. Senator Murkowski said in the Senate committee room she's aware that many of her constituents don't believe DeVos is qualified for the position.
I have to acknowledge the thousands of Alaskans who've shared their concerns with me about Mrs. DeVos as Secretary of Education. They have come to my office here in Washington, in Alaska, on the phones, in petitions.
Murkowski says she generally believes a president should be able to assemble his cabinet. But
I have serious concerns about a nominee to be Secretary of Education who's been so involved in one side of the equation, so immersed in the push for vouchers, that she may be unaware of what is broken in our public schools or how to fix it.
The Education Committee voted 12 to 11 along party lines to advance DeVos's nomination to the full Senate. And Murkowski was one of the 12. The senator warned, though, that she might not vote for confirmation.
She has not yet earn my full support. And when each of us have the opportunity to vote aye or nay on the floor, I would not advise that she yet count on my vote.
That wasn't enough for Anchorage resident Dina Mitchell.
I cannot express the level of shock and just sadness that Senator Murkowski did not stand up for our Alaskan children.
Mitchell is a member of Great Alaska Schools, a group that has been lobbying Alaska opposition to DeVos. They say the nominee shows no commitment to the concept that all children deserve a great chance at education. The group, with 24 hours notice, organized a lunchtime demonstration at Murkowski's Anchorage office on Monday. Mitchell says about 250 people showed up, and she said Murkowski's staffers told her their phones are inundated.
They said they every chance they get, every 15 minutes, they are emptying that voicemail and it fills right back up. So Alaskans are persistent. They keep trying to call until they can get it through to that voicemail.
Some Alaskans are pointing to the DeVos family's contributions to Murkowski's political campaign, more than $40,000. Mitchell says she doesn't believe in conspiracies. And the contributions were in 2015, long before anyone knew Trump would be elected president or that DeVos would be his nominee. But Mitchell says the contributions may have had a subtle influence.
You know, it's difficult when somebody has been supportive of you and been friendly toward you. I'm sure it is difficult to then vote against somebody like that. I think it's just human nature.
Mitchell says she hopes to keep the pressure on Murkowski until the Senate vote. Earlier in the day, the Senate Energy Committee, which Murkowski chairs, voted to send the president's nominees to head the Departments of Interior and Energy to the full Senate for a vote also. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Federal agencies and scientists, both inside and outside government, endured a roller coaster of a week as President Trump's new administration took the reins. Many worry that funding for science and environmental research could be on the chopping block under the new president, along with public communication about climate change. But so far, the only sure thing is nothing's for sure. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rachel Waldholtz and Elizabeth Jenkins report.
For those who study climate change or communicate about it, it was not a reassuring first week. I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage. Memos went out to employees at the Departments of Interior and Agriculture limiting public communication. The White House removed sections of its website on climate change, and the Environmental Protection Agency first said it would follow suit, then backtracked. And this came on top of the new president's own statements on climate change. In the past, Trump has called global warming a hoax. To Larry Hinsman, vice chancellor for research at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, it all points to one thing. He expects federal funding for climate research to drop.
Clearly, there's going to be a shift in the emphases or the focus of research. And at this point, it's going to be very difficult to conduct climate research per se. That's not so good for our state and our researchers, and that we do a lot of climate work.
Hinsman says Alaska is a hub for climate research, and the lion's share of funding for that work comes from the federal government. He spoke at the Alaska Marine Science Symposium, which gathered scores of scientists in Anchorage, many of them focused on the effects of climate change. One of them was Karen Ashton, a scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in Massachusetts. She worries the new administration doesn't value basic science.
Well, I'm very concerned. I see an atmosphere of hostility towards science that I think is unfounded. It's unfounded, and I also think it's against the national interest.
It's in the nation's interest, she says, to understand how the environment is changing so communities, industry, and the government can plan for those changes. Brendan Kelly directs the study of environmental Arctic change. He served in the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy under President Barack Obama. His key concern is that federal researchers be allowed to work free of political influence.
The gold standard of high-quality science that comes out of this country and has for a long time is threatened when any entity of Congress, the government, Congress, the administration, whoever, starts to meddle with that peer-reviewed process.
But Kelly says it's still way too soon to say what the Trump administration will do.
I start by saying to everybody, take a deep breath, right?
And remember, he says, transitions are always messy.
That was also the message at the Minnehaha Glacier Visitor Center. It's complicated. I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Last Monday, John Neary, the director of the Visitor Center, got an email. It was from the United States Department of Agriculture, his boss.
It said, stop all media until we review how this is going to move forward. It's not abnormal to get that kind of a memo at the change of a presidential administration.
Neary's worked for federal agencies for over 30 years, and he says he's seen this kind of directive during transitions before, back when President Obama was sworn into office, and during the Bush administration before that. The following Tuesday, he received another message from the higher-ups. It said the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center could continue normal communications. Neary says that includes posting on social media about climate change. He says it's not a political issue.
It is real. It is happening. We can see it out our windows. We understand, based on all the facts, that it's in part because of our actions as humans on Earth. And we will continue to say that, but we'll say it in an engaging, positive way that connects people instead of just infuriates people.
Neary says unless he hears otherwise, that's the plan. For now, it's business as usual at the Mendenhall Glacier. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
And I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
Governor Bill Walker criticized President Trump's order that halted immigration from seven heavily Muslim countries, indefinitely banned Syrian refugees, and temporarily banned all other refugees. During today's public radio program, Talk of Alaska, Walker said the Trump administration didn't appropriately handle the process for issuing the order.
So I think the changes of magnitude to not be done without any sort of process involved, I think it catches people off guard. I think it frightens people because some things just aren't well thought out. And so I think this is one of them.
Walker noted he decided against joining 30 other governors in 2015 when they asked former President Barack Obama to stop allowing Syrian refugees into the country. Legislators are considering changes to a 7-month-old law that overhauled the criminal justice system. The commission that helped shape the law has recommended 14 changes to it. APRN and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what lawmakers hope to accomplish.
The law allowed some low-risk offenders to avoid jail time, and it made other changes in sentencing, bail, and probation that are aimed at reducing the number of repeat offenders. Critics say the law is allowing some people charged with serious crimes to be released the same day they're arrested. The Alaska Criminal Justice Commission recommended a series of changes Monday. It suggested that some felony convictions currently receiving suspended sentences should instead lead to up to 90 days in jail. North Pole Senator John Coghill helped write the law. He says the Senate Judiciary Committee is trying to strike a balance in revising the law.
I think we're going to drill down pretty well in our committee, find what is the real public safety problem, can we give the police tools, can we give the law tools to actually hold people accountable so that when whatever society dishes up, we can hold people accountable.
Other recommendations in the report include correcting what the commission called an apparent oversight that eliminated a legal provision requiring sex offenders to serve probation. The commission recommended requiring mandatory probation for sex offenders. The commission reached a consensus on the recommendations that became the basis for the law last year. But that consensus has been tough to find this year, with some commission members calling for restoring tougher penalties than most commission members recommend. The only time they reached a consensus this year was a recommendation to make technical changes to the law. Anchorage Senator Kevin Meyer, a Republican, says the recommendation on giving up to 90 days to Class C felons appears to be too soft.
I think that we have to keep in mind of the victim. I know if somebody was threatening me with a gun, I wouldn't want just a slap on the wrist.
Critics of the law have linked it to a rise in some crimes in parts of the state. But Coghill, a Republican, says the sweeping nature of the law has focused public attention on it.
So it's not surprising that people would blame that when there was a failure in public safety or our ability to hold people accountable. But it just simply isn't true that it's the cause of all failures in our system.
Anchorage Senator Bill Willikowski, a Democrat, says he doesn't want to amend the law based on what he says may be knee-jerk reactions. He wants any changes to be based on evidence from Alaska and other states.
If just the penalties we have in the bill work and people are getting rehabilitated, then that's certainly something I'd want to know. And by the same token, if it's not working, if people are getting off and committing other crimes, then I certainly want to know that as well.
Coghill says some of the pushback to the law was political, while other concerns were due to unrelated factors that predated the law, such as the ongoing opioid addiction epidemic. He says tight budgets in the Department of Law and local police departments have also caused problems, as has a separate change in bail schedules made by the court system.
Yes, there's been pushback. So what we try to do is we try to figure out what pushback is political, what is misinformation, what is a timeline problem, and what is a real public safety problem.
Coghill is a non-voting member of the Criminal Justice Commission. He plans to use the commission's recommendations to draft potential changes to the law, which the Senate Judiciary Committee will discuss in the coming weeks. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, California's carbon sins could soon become Alaska's rewards in a new cap-and-trade plan for one southeast forest.
This is the first time there's really been a real market for growing older-growth forests.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're a rural Alaska resident, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, February 3, 2017. Applicants with knowledge of regional subsistence uses, customs, and traditions are needed. Council meetings serve as a forum for subsistence management. More at 1-800-478-1456. This message sponsored by your Federal Subsistence Board and the U.S. Departments of the Interior and Agriculture.
After more than two dozen explosions, Bogoslav volcano has finally dropped ash on Unalaska. In its longest eruption since activity began 6 weeks ago, the volcano dusted the island with less than a millimeter of ash last night and produced a strong sulfurous smell. The eruption lasted 8 hours, starting around 8:20 p.m. with a series of explosions that eventually morphed into a continuous ash plume. Christy Wallace, a geologist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, says the eruption signals a change in behavior for Bogoslav, which has typically produced short, standalone bursts.
Last night's activity was very interesting. There were many pulses. It lasted for many hours. So there certainly was some kind of a shift last night, and hopefully we can better understand that in the coming hours.
Meanwhile, the eruption has subsided, and the 25,000-foot ash cloud is dissipating as it moves east. Scientists don't worry about air quality until several millimeters of ash have accumulated, and Wallace says it's been quite a while since Bogoslav has produced that much.
The last report of that amount of ash was in 1906 from a Bogoslav eruption. There was, I think, 6 millimeters of ash, so that would be considered significant, and we would want to be monitoring the situation at that point.
Scientists have raised the volcano's alert level to warning, citing its heightened state of unrest and unpredictable condition. Three people aboard a plane that crashed near the Kenai Peninsula on Sunday have been found. Chief Petty Officer Sean Eggert says a Coast Guard crew out of Kodiak located the plane at about 6 o'clock last evening.
There were no injuries reported by any of the three people at the site of the crash. Our crew was able to land and then pick those people up and transport them back to Anchorage, where they were checked out by waiting emergency medical personnel.
They were then reunited with their families, according to a post on Facebook by the Alaska District Church of the Nazarene. The church identified them as Josh Smith, his daughter Danielle, and John White of the Soldotna Nazarene community. The flight was traveling from Lake Hood to Soldotna on Sunday. When it didn't arrive on time, family members reported it overdue. The Alaska Rescue Coordination Center, along with Civil Air Patrol crews, searched by air on Sunday and Monday, but were not able to locate the crash. The center asked the Coast Guard for assistance on Monday. The MJ-60 Jayhawk crew used the Cessna's emergency locator beacon to trace the flight to the west side of Cook Inlet.
Someone down on the ground fired a flare up that the pilot of the helicopter was able to see.
The plane had landed in deep snow on a ridgeline near the Chona River and flipped over. The passengers spent about 24 hours at the site before they were found. Rescuers credit the pilot's emergency preparedness with their well-being.
You know, cell phone signal's not always the best here, so having a functioning radio, whether you're on board a boat or an aircraft of some sort, having a signaling devices such as mirrors and flares, even smoke signals, things like that are going to be very important should an emergency occur.
The cause of the crash has not yet been identified. Instead of harvesting their forests for timber, the Chugach Alaska Corporation is selling an innovative new forest product, the carbon stored in the trees. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Jennifer Pemberton has the story of Alaska's entrance into the California carbon credit market.
Well, anybody who's been out in Prince William Sound can tell you it's an area of tremendous beauty.
Josie Hickel is a senior vice president of Chugach Alaska Corporation, an Alaska Native corporation.
Glaciers, forested acres, you know, wilderness areas. The area is full of wildlife and bird life, and the fishing, obviously, is fantastic.
Among Chugach Alaska's 900,000 acres are hundreds of thousands of acres of forest, some of it old growth and a lot of it hard to get to. Instead of selling their trees directly, they're selling the carbon stored inside those trees. There's a market for this in California, and it recently opened up to Alaskan landowners. Brian Schillinglaw is with New Forests, the group in California that will help Chugach manage its carbon assets. He explains how California's carbon trade works.
The major emitters of greenhouse gases have to have a permit or an offset for every ton of pollution they emit in the state of California. And so that's mostly oil and gas and electric power.
Maybe you've heard California's system called cap and trade. There's a cap or a limit on how much pollution companies can emit, and then there's a trade for anything above and beyond that cap. Think of any excess pollution as a carbon sin. Companies in California can pay to have their sins absolved. That absolution comes in the form of sustainably managed forests in other parts of the country.
This is the first time there's really been a real market for growing older growth forests. The system will pay you to not liquidate your forest, not cut down all your forest, and to grow inventory.
The California cap and trade market is the largest carbon market in North America, but currently there isn't enough supply of carbon offsets to meet the demand of California's polluters. Alaska's entrance to the market could help change that. Josie Hickel says that other Alaska Native corporations are considering similar deals.
There are other Alaska Native corporations that we're aware of that are looking into and pursuing carbon projects at this time. This is the first one that I'm aware of that has where the deal has been finalized at this point.
Chugach is waiting for spring for a complete forest inventory to take place. But Hickel says they estimate that they have several million carbon credits in their forest land. Basically, that means that Chugach owns tens of millions of dollars worth of carbon credits that can be sold anytime a California polluter goes over their cap. For Josie Hickel, the deal means more than just a new revenue source.
We need to be able to have financial benefits for our shareholders, as well as making sure that we have the funding for many generations to come in terms of upholding our heritage and our culture and our language, and this is a great way to be able to do that.
This is uncharted territory for Alaskan landowners, but the economic benefits to the corporation, as well as to subsistence and commercial fisheries, make California's carbon market an attractive new frontier. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Jennifer Pemberton in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Your health matters. Tuesday, January 31st is the last day to enroll in the health insurance marketplace. Information at getcoveredalaska.org or call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by Alaska Primary Care Association.
A $54 million project to add a pair of floating cruise ship berths to Juneau's waterfront is within months of completion. It will expand the port's capacity to accommodate larger vessels. As KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports, the project is being paid for by port fees and the head tax paid by cruise ship passengers.
Cruise ships are getting bigger, and Juneau is trying to expand its terminal to keep up with the industry requirements. The downtown Alaska steamship dock was limited to tying up ships greater than about 800 feet, and the Southern Cruise Terminal, or CT dock, was not much bigger, says Eric Schall, Juneau's deputy port engineer.
The original max length that we could receive at our Southern CT dock was 960 feet, and now we'll be able to receive a 1,000-foot vessel and an 1,100-foot vessel at the same time.
Manson Construction is the lead contractor working to expand the cruise ship berths. 25-strong crew from the Seattle-based firm has been working double shifts, drilling and driving piles in the daytime and welding in the evenings. The work should be wrapped up by early May. The cruise ship industry says the new dock still isn't as big as it should be. John Binkley is president of the Cruise Lines International Association Alaska, which represents companies sailing state waters.
They liked bigger ships. There's more amenities, more variety of things to do on the ships. And it's also an economic reason. The larger the ship, just like with a bus or a car or an airplane, the more passengers you can get on, the better the economics are.
Meanwhile, standing next to the new floating berths, Assemblyman Jesse Keel attends a recent tour to see the progress. He says the new cruise ship terminal will aid the local economy.
I really like that we're replacing this infrastructure for the next 50 years of this piece of Juneau's economy. And of course, the added benefit is that Juneau sales tax and property taxpayers aren't footing this bill. This is coming from taxes that the industry and the passengers pay for the services that we provide.
The first cruise ships are scheduled to arrive in Juneau on May 1st. They are the New Amsterdam and the Eurodam, both 935-foot-long signature-class vessels operated by Holland America Line. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Bethel native Natalie Hansen has set a new American record in women's powerlifting. On Saturday in Milwaukee, Hansen squatted 578.7 pounds, more than three times her body weight, and more than 33 pounds over the former record. The 26-year-old set the new all-time high at the USA Powerlifting Wisconsin State Open Championship. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
Natalie Hansen knew she had three chances to break the American women's open division record in her weight class. Hansen stands 5'3" and weighs 185 pounds. On her first lift, Hansen started light. That is, if you consider a quarter of a ton light.
So my opening squat was 240 kilos, which is 529. So I was just like 15 pounds off the American record on my opening squat.
On the second squat, she went for it.
I actually broke the record on my second attempt squat with 255 kilos, which is 562 pounds.
Not content with that, on the third lift, Hansen went for yet more, and the record she had just set was broken.
The weight was 262.5 kilograms, which is 578 pounds.
The squat raises the American record by more than 33 pounds and automatically sends Natalie Hansen to the national competition in Orlando, Florida in May. The double record-breaking lifts were part of her plan to reclaim her former title as the American women's open division record holder.
When I first broke the record was 2015, and I set it with 535 pounds or 242.5 kilos at USA Powerlifting Nationals.
She would have broken her own record the following year, but she failed a drug test. This is how she explains it.
I injured my back at meet, and I took a painkiller like at the end of the meet after I was done competing when I hurt my back to relieve myself of that pain, and then I was drug tested, and I failed the drug test.
After that experience, Hansen says she was ready to have her record back. And this past weekend, she took it, along with two additional personal records, in the deadlift with 474 pounds and in total weight lifted, 1,400 pounds.
It's exciting and it's really rewarding to achieve it, but I was ready for it.
In the world of weights, Hansen is a celebrity. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Elizabeth Jenkins, Andrew Kitchenman, and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Laura Craigle in Unalaska, Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. January 31st is the last day to enroll in the Health Insurance Marketplace. For assistance in your area, go to getcoveredalaska.org or call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by Alaska Primary Care Association. Artists, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. Deadline is March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.